This is Dan Ray, the host of Nightside. I hope you enjoy listening to the Nightside podcasts here at the Nightside website, and I invite you to join us every Monday through Friday night from 8 to midnight, live for Nightside on WBZ News Radio 1030. We're going to focus on China, and we have back with us in studio from Boston University, Professor Gregory Stoller. He is now a senior lecturer at what's called the Questrom School of Business Strategy and Innovation Development, and he is just back from the People's Republic of China. Professor Stoller, how are you?
Thank you. Nice to be back, Dan. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about a lot of things. By the way, I had a dispatch from our Nightside ambassador to China.
David Seidler.
Yes, and he tells us that on next Monday, April 4th, is Qingming Day or Tomb Sweeping Day. And families are supposed to clean the family tomb, decorate it with plastic flowers. They do last longer. I found
Absolutely.
That myself. Yeah. And burn paper money that through some process is received and then reconstructed as valid money for those in the afterlife. Apparently, they do accept the yen in the afterlife. American money, however, is preferred. And after all this is done, the family goes out for lunch and gets drunk, again, to honor those in the afterlife. We call that a wake here, or funeral, anyway, from your Nightside China Ambassador David Seidler. They have a lot of days over there. Had you heard of that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Tomb Sweeping Day.
Yes, it's one of many official holidays or rituals. There are also, of course, the big official holidays if you have the Chinese New Year celebration and everything else. But yeah, it's very much part of the culture, and it's interesting to watch from the inside looking out.
Okay, so now you are just back. You were there 2 weeks ago. And by the way, Rob, is that picture now posted? Okay. Those of you who are listening on computer, we don't have cameras in the studio. However, if you go to the webpage, the show's webpage, cbsboston.com/nightside, you will see a picture that Professor Stoller sent to me just a couple of weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when he was in China wearing, very proudly, a Nightside sweatshirt, a Nightside hoodie, standing next to the Great Wall of China. First of all, thank you for your choice in clothing.
You're welcome. I wish I could tell you that it was part of a massive plan. I was late to the airport. I grabbed the top sweatshirt on the in the pile, and when we were going to the Great Wall, it was cold, and all of a sudden, I'm standing on the Great Wall of China, and I said, wow, photo opportunity.
Nothing wrong with that. So if you'd like to see the professor standing next to
were you on the Great Wall. Yes.
You were on the Great
yes.
Wall. Wow. Okay. It looked to me like you were standing. So the Great Wall has different levels.
Yes. And there are several different parts of the Great Wall. So it was terrific. It was at the risk of sounding a pun, it was great.
Was that the first time? I've never been to the Great Wall. The only Great Wall that I've visited is the Green Monster at Fenway Park. Never been to the Great Wall in China. Where'd you fly into Beijing?
So, yeah, we did Beijing and Hong Kong. This was my first trip with Boston University's Questrom School of Business. We took 16 undergraduate students that were from not only the business school, Questrom, but also the engineering school and the College of Arts and Sciences. There were multiple nationalities represented, and we visited 12 companies, 6 in Beijing and 6 in Hong Kong.
Okay, so it wasn't like you landed at the airport and drove directly to the Great Wall wearing your Nightside t-shirt.
That's correct. That's correct.
Your Nightside sweatshirt, your hoodie, your Nightside hooded sweatshirt. So if you go to cbsboston.com/nightside right now, you can see a picture of my guest standing on the Great Wall of China. That will establish his bona fides if he hasn't already. And it will also let you know that the Nightside hooded sweatshirt has been seen in China. And our ambassador also spreads the word.
The next time I go over, I really have to plan something. This is great.
Well, I would think there'd be some sort of diplomatic meeting or conference or something like that. Professor Seidler also in the education business as well. So tell us about the trip and tell us what you're doing at BU. And then I want to talk about what's going on in China, because it's a part of the world that we don't understand. We owe them a lot of money.
Sure.
And they built a wall. wall. It was huge. And maybe they can help us build a wall and pay back some money. Who knows?
You mean the $1 trillion of treasury debt that they own? Yes.
Yeah, it'll be huge. Right. We'll work the deal. They'll build the wall. We'll get money. It'll be perfect. Okay.
So this is actually a class. We put the undergraduate students through multiple prep sessions on campus. Of the 12 companies, we assigned a company or a city or a historical overview to each of the students. So they researched each of these visits. They then grabbed articles from the popular press. They did in-class presentations to prepare the rest of the team. We went to Beijing and Hong Kong. We also interacted with BU alumni while we were there. And our final prep session is actually tomorrow, where they will be delivering full individual 10-page research papers reflecting on the experience. And I think what makes this experience so unique is that I change the countries and the cities and the companies every year.
Well, you always go to China.
We always go to China, but this year was Beijing and Hong Kong. Next year might be Shanghai and Tokyo. And 2 years from now, it might be Seoul, and if not China, Bangkok, just to keep it fresh.
All right. We're going to talk about what's going on in China. I also want to better understand the purpose of the program. Obviously, I'd love to know what this trip, what these courses will do to prepare these students. Yeah. I want to get to all of that. Obviously, this is not a junket that these students are going on. My guest is Professor Gregory Stoller of Boston University. He has been to China how many times?
Since 1994.
Since how many times?
Probably 40 times, 50 40, times.
40 times. So he has been to China about as often as I've been to West Roxbury, okay? Just to put it in some... No, I've been to West Roxbury more than he's been to China. But I live a lot closer to West Roxbury than he does to China. If you have a question, if you've been to China, if you want to share an experience, you just got back 2 weeks or three? Or
we were there during spring break, Boston University spring break. So that was about 2-3 weeks ago.
Two to three weeks. All right. You know the numbers. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. We're going to try to better understand China. It is truly still a mysterious place, part of the world, certainly to me and maybe to many of you. And we're going to learn a lot in the next hour, so stay with us.
I like you, Danny.
We're going to say a few things, and then you'll say a few things, and then we'll be done.
I got Dan. I got talk.
Dan Ray, Nightside, WBZ, News Radio 1030.
We're talking about China. With us is Professor Gregory Stoller. He has been to China, he says, more than 40 times since 1994, which is incredible in of itself. I want to break down this course that you teach at BU, because there may be other students who are thinking about something like this. This course is open to anyone within the university, law
Correct.
Student, undergraduate student, undergraduate?
We're starting with the undergraduate population. It's called the Global Management Experience, by the way. Mm-hmm. And it's a real class. It's not a shopping trip. It's not a sightseeing junket.
It's not spring break in Florida.
It's not spring break in Florida. Yeah. And as I said, what I think makes it unique is that if you take it in 2016, if you then want to take the course again in 2017 or you weren't eligible in 2016, the companies, the countries, and the cities are going to be completely different.
Okay, so in order to get into the course, and this is condensed. I mean, I assume that the course begins a few weeks in advance of the trip.
Right, it begins in January, during the spring semester.
Right.
And
then,
it meets once a week.
Right.
We go through seven 90-minute prep sessions.
But then it ends, after you've come back, they're going to write a paper. And
right, and then we have our sort of, not post-mortem, but our recap, if you will, our feedback loop is going to happen tomorrow when we say, all right, you've gotten back, you've been back to the States for a couple of weeks, you've written your paper, what do you think?
Okay.
What did you learn?
So unlike a traditional college course in the spring that might run from January with finals in May, more condensed, more intense, 3 credit hours. And again, it's open. They have to apply. They have to submit a resume.
Right. And they also have to write an essay. And we turn students away. They've got to submit their grade point average.
Right.
And what I also love the fact that we're doing it over spring break is that several of the companies we visited have opened up internship opportunities to our students.
Wow.
So it's possible that they could be going back to Asia on June 1st after the semester ends with a job.
I'm assuming that more than 16 students apply for this.
Yes.
And it'll only become more popular over time. So the purpose is... again, you have the expertise and the interest in China. Why is it so important for young people, for young Americans, and for young college students to understand China? Let's start with the basics.
I think that when you're dealing with the world's second largest economy, you can't ignore it. And it's a fact of life that like it or not, China owns over $1 trillion of the U.S. Treasury debt. So as a result, we're connected, you know, in good times and in bad. And with China's economic fluctuations, and there have been several in the past year alone, it's affected the price of U.S. oil. It's affected U.S. interest rates. It's certainly affected the U.S. stock market. But for the average person on the street, they're getting affected too.
The other thing which people don't understand about China, and I don't understand a lot about China, it's a population of, what's it, 1.2 billion?
Yes.
And as I understand it, a significant number, I mean tens of millions, maybe more, in the nether reaches of the country, live in caves.
Right. I mean, the per capita income in the United States is over $50,000 a year. In China, it's under $9,000 per year.
Right. But that's a substantial jump for them in the last 20 or so years.
And that's why I think it's important in the past 5 years alone for any U.S. student, undergrad, grad, business or non-business, to understand what's happening, because the country has gone through a dramatic transformation, not only since the early 90s of Geigo, Kaifeng, reform and open markets, but in the past 5 years alone.
And is their GDP getting close to ours?
Not even close.
Not even close. Even, well, they have 1.2 million, we have 300 million. So they have about four times the number of citizens. But if their annual average income is $9,000 a year, but they have four times as many citizens, I'm assuming that gap between our GDP, which has always been the biggest in the world, and their GDP has to be beginning to close somewhat.
Right. Well, on an aggregate basis, they've overtaken Japan. So Japan used to be the world's second largest economy. Now China's the world's second largest economy. But on an individual basis, they still have a substantial way to go. I mean, again, this is...
Right, but they have four times as many people.
Right, but if you have to buy
four times as many products.
And therein lies the problem, right? Is first of all citizens of China are not created equally. As you indicated, the people in Beijing and Shanghai are a lot different than the people in Xinjiang, which is on the western province, and people...
And am I correct when I say they literally live in caves?
People do live in dire poverty, and they can't afford meat. You know, by the numbers, by the way, the U.S. GDP is 55,904. Hong Kong, by comparison, just over $42,000. China, $8,280.
Okay, but again, they have four times as many people, so therefore, in effect, they're... Now, when you take on the multiple of the people, they're getting up around $32,000.
Right, but therein lies a problem, okay. Is that any country is going to be successful economically if people pour money back into the economy. And if people are not spending, then the economy is not going to flourish. And that's the problem that China's experiencing
okay,
right now.
Okay, let's talk a little bit, and let's try to make this relevant to the current political
absolutely
election that's going on. We have a lot of criticism towards the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is still not completely approved. It still has to go through Congress, as both Steve Lynch and Mike Capuano have told my audience recently. I assume that you are somebody who believes in free trade by virtue of your position.
Absolutely.
And your relationship with China. But there are a lot of people out there who are going to say, hey, wait a sec, we've been playing this free trade game now for years, and we're losing, and we're losing badly. Would you agree with that we're losing?
Oh, but I also think you have to decide what side you're on, right? You know, China has provided more than a living wage in the past 3 years. I mean, wages last year alone raised
good for China. What good does that do me?
And therein lies the point, right? Is that if China's wages are increasing, it's going to affect the U.S. economy in bad ways. Because think of consumer prices. If wages have gone up 22%, someone's got to even the score. So either the middleman is going to have a reduced margin or consumer prices are going to increase. Look at it from another perspective. If China's economy is going down and they're not able to buy commodities and they're not able to buy oil in the volume they bought it before, why do you think the price of oil is so low? Why have the commodity markets tanked? Why are people whose international companies spend so much money in China worried about getting laid off because nobody's doing business with China anymore because nobody's spending money?
My view of the oil market, and I'm not an expert on that either, but my view of the oil market is there's some manipulation going on here, and OPEC decides to cut back, OPEC decides to increase. I remember when gas prices in this country back in the summer of 2008 were really cheap, which almost was it was a predictor of the big economic problems that were coming our way, and then gas prices went up to oil prices went up to $147 a barrel. And the argument that was made at that time was that, no, there's no manipulation, but China and India, with their huge populations, they are building cars and they're driving around. And the argument was, so now my question is, if that argument was true back then, okay, and it may have been, what happened to turn that around so dramatically?
So maybe you're right that I'll meet you halfway in the oil market. There's manipulation. Look at commodities. It's basic supply and demand. If people aren't buying, if the world's second largest economy or its companies aren't buying, then demand is going to go down, supply is going to go up, and prices are going to come down.
Or if the oil-producing companies are flooding the market in an effort to bring oil prices down to put the small drillers in America out of business, there's that theory that is out there as well.
Right, but I'm also looking about the average Joe in the United States. And as a result, if you work for a large company that, say, 20% of your business is overseas, and of that 20%, 75% is from China, and they're not doing well, guess who's going to get laid off? I mean, U.S. companies will always get rid of their international divisions first because it's not part of their core business. So people are worried.
My guest is Professor Gregory Stoller from Boston University. He's been on this program before. He has recently switched affiliations from a school in Chestnut Hill to Boston University, just from one end of Commonwealth Avenue to the other. Okay, simple as that. He brings students a couple of times a year, it seems, over to China for an extraordinary experience for them. But this does, even if you're not a student at at Boston University or have a son, daughter, or grandchild at Boston University, his perspective is important, and we are more than happy to enjoy, I should say, entertain any questions, comments, or ideas. Feel free to call, and you know the number, 617-254-1030, 888-WBZ-1030. We're coming right back.
There are countless reasons to choose Tufts Medical Center, and now five more. Five stars for superior quality and patient results. In fact, Tufts Medical Center is the only academic medical center in New England to earn the prestigious 2015 National Quality Award from the University Health System Consortium. To learn more about what it means to be a five-star hospital and why patients love Tufts Medical Center, visit TuftsMedicalCenter.org/5stars.
Here comes your appraisal. He's going to play hardball. But you're the Fairview Semi-Competitive Softball League MVP. And we're not talking slow pitch. You're used to the heat. So when he holds your feet to the fire, you tell him you need time to think about it.
Okay, here's your offer. Good for 7 days at any CarMax.
7 days? That's a curveball. Say something. You're staring.
Forget what you heard about selling your car. Get a free appraisal in as little as 30 minutes. Good for 7 days. No hassle, no pressure. CarMax. Click or tap the banner to learn more.
Danny? That's my name. Don't wear it out.
Are you listening to me?
We're doing the Night Side Shuffle.
Night Side with Dan Ray.
We're doing the Night Side Shuffle.
Over the radio.
WBZ.
All night long.
News Radio 1030.
We're talking about China, and we're talking about trade with China. My guest in studio is Professor Gregory Stoller. He is a professor at Boston University who has just returned, having taken 16 students, mostly undergraduates.
Yes.
Okay. He is with the Questrom School of Business Strategy and Innovation at Boston University, taught for several years at the other end of Commonwealth Avenue out in Chestnut Hill, but he is now at Boston University, of which I'm a law school alumni. And did you have any law students?
Not this time around, but I have had law school students in my class this past fall,
okay.
And it's great.
So here's the question, okay?
Yes.
Without getting into the actual politics, Donald Trump obviously has been campaigning and he's been talking about trade imbalance and how that a lot of our jobs, manufacturing, going overseas, and he's talking about putting tariffs on to try to level the playing field. You know, we know the language, okay? Are we in trouble economically as a country? As a consequence of the trade policies that have evolved, which I think for the most part have been policies that said, let's make ourselves available to the world and make the world available to us.
So you're the political expert, I'm not. But that's like saying that you don't believe in driving a car because it's wasting energy. In the sense, Trump is trying to get elected, so he's trying to drum up support,
sure,
and say evil China or evil non-US businesses. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, how many products can you or any of the Nightside Nation listeners look at that aren't made from outside the United States?
Well, that therein lies the problem.
Right, exactly.
I mean, the argument is that we are bringing into the country products which are made overseas with very cheap labor, and sometimes even labor that would what we would think of would be slave labor based upon what these folks are being paid. So put the moral question aside. Should we not, I guess, bring as much business back to America? And I'm sure that's not
so
the position.
Let me ask you a question. WeatherTech, which is one of the WBZ advertisers, they proudly proclaim that their laser-measured floor mats are made in America. You know, New England Shirt Company, that was on my television show, they made in America. But yet for every company that's made in America, I have good friends and business contacts in the shoe business, and they go to some of the top retailers and say, these products are made in America. And they say, what's the price? They said, no, you don't understand. They're made in America. And they said, that's fine, but what's the price?
So what you're saying is, because it's so expensive to create the product in America, it becomes then impossible for retailers or wholesalers to make a profit.
Or they're indifferent where it was manufactured, provided that the price is right. But you hit the nail on the head, is that if China has slave labor wages or poor human rights abuses, you know, you can go through the list, et cetera, that makes a politician pretty popular in election season.
No, I get that, but are we digging our own grave?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that it is the classic idea of, you know, money seeks the highest and best use. And I think the American consumer, you know, so this is a question I ask my students all the time. I say, will you support your local bookstore? And 3/4 of the hands go up. And I say, what is the difference between your local bookstore and Amazon now is not $5, but it's $45. 1/10 of the hands go up. Is that people want to support their local bookstore, provided it's not affecting them economically.
Well, again, I think it's – we had a caller last hour was talking about made in the USA and all of that, and I think that's a very important impulse. At the same time, there is a world out there that we have to deal with. It would be nice if the Chinese economy bought as much goods and services from the U.S. as we buy from them. We have a trade imbalance that is also hurting us economically.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's not going to go anytime soon.
Anytime soon, meaning within the next decade?
Correct.
Okay, let's get some phone calls. 617-254-1030, 888-WBZ-1030. Let's go to Robert in Canton. Hey, Robert, welcome. You're on with Professor Gregory Stoller of Boston University. Go ahead, Robert. Is Robert there or no? You got to turn that phone down, Robert. Turn the radio down, okay?
Yeah, how's that? Better?
Well, yeah, because we've just spent 14 seconds trying to get you on the air here, Robert. These are precious radio.
Dan.
No problem. It's just you listen to the phone.
I was having a little late night coffee cake.
Oh, okay. I wish I was there. Okay, so you're on with Professor Stoller. Let's make it a great phone call. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I lived 1 year in China, and I married a Chinese girl. That was my reason for going. And I've been in the education business for several years, and I figured I'd try to open up a small agency and try to get students to study here in the U.S. And one of the biggest challenges I found was the cultural difference. And I was just wondering if in the professor's class, that's a topic he touches upon when doing business with China, the cultural difference. And if so, how does he teach his students to tackle that barrier?
Let me make sure I understand what you're trying to do. You're trying to set up a travel business here in America, which would bring students from China to America to go to school in America, correct?
An education business for students to study in America.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. They would enroll in American colleges, high schools, etc., right?
Right.
That's going on now already. I'm told that there's a tremendous influx of students.
Oh, it's a huge business.
Yeah. Okay. So you're trying to get into a business which I think may already exist. Professor Stoller?
Well, I'm assuming, hi, Robert, that this is going to be a private enterprise as opposed to a secondary school or a college or a graduate school. But to answer your question.
He sounds like you want to be a travel agent, right? That's what you want to do?
Well, yeah, just to, just help.
An educational agent.
Study in America, right. And but one of the challenges I found was just the cultural difference and the barrier between me and the competition, and how to gain the trust from the customer.
So there certainly are cultural barriers, and I think the first lesson that I tell my Boston University Questrom students is that don't look at it as us versus them. that there are cultural differences that exist, and they're not going to go away, and education isn't going to change it, time isn't going to change it, but instead of looking at it as a problem, embrace it and try and work through it, et cetera.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But I'm still trying to understand what you're trying to do. Are you trying to put together a business in which you will help guide and tutor Chinese students who are trying to get into schools here? Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about just expediting the travel back and forth?
No. So a student, you know, they come to me with their GPA, their English proficiency level exam scores,
yeah,
and their transcripts and an idea of where they want to study.
So
then I provide them with a range of different schools that might suit them. And then I help them through the whole application process, the visa process.
Okay. So you want to become, in effect, a counselor for Chinese students who are coming here, attempting to come here.
Yeah, kind of like an educational counselor.
Yeah, okay. And then how much of a presence do you have in China? How are those students going to find you, Robert?
The biggest thing I used was the Chinese social media, which they call WeChat.
And has that worked?
I don't know if the professor's heard of WeChat.
Right. Has that worked?
I use it 25 times a day.
Yeah. Has it worked so far for you, Robert?
It has. But like I said, I get to the certain point where then the customer has other agencies to go with, but there's a whole trust level
If they're trying to come here, Robert, they need to have someone who knows our system. It seems to me your selling point should be your system. Is your competition other American educational counselors or counselors in China?
Counselors in China.
Oh, okay. I don't, Professor. You got an idea? I mean, it seems to me that he's got to sell himself as somebody who understands our system and our college application system better than the people who are doing it in China.
And he's got to establish the trust and the credibility, because there are,
right,
unfortunately, Robert, probably 25 other people like you that are trying to do the same thing just in Boston alone. But that doesn't mean you should quit. And I will tell you the whole concept of guanxi, or relationships in China, do take time. But if you are able to do it, then there is a lot of money and success to be made, provided you're patient.
Here's my last question for you, Robert. How many times have you been to China?
Twice.
For how long?
Once for 6 months and another time for a year. I just came back 6 months ago.
Okay, so you've spent significant time. Do you have a coterie, a group of friends over there?
Yeah, I have a small group. And like I said, my wife's Chinese. She opened a Western-style laundromat, actually the first person in Hangzhou to open a Western-style laundromat.
And how's that going?
It's going a little slow in the beginning, just because it's changing.
All right. I would never think that an American laundromat would make it in China, but guess what? Hey, you never know.
It's the year 2016.
Yeah. I would say if you could get a Dunkin' Donuts franchise over there, then you'd really be in business. Robert, thank you for the call. I think it's wonderful what you're trying to do.
Thanks,
just man. One little suggestion you might make. You know, there's a couple of prep schools in the Boston area that have a high concentration of students from China. I'm trying to think of the one, Newman Prep, which is in downtown Boston. I would say spend a little bit of time with some of those students over there, maybe.
Okay,
Harry Lynch is the principal.
I listen to your show frequently, and I was waiting for the right time to call.
Okay, well, Harry.
Great question.
Harry Lynch, by the way, is the principal over there. He's a really great guy, and he has a great interest in China as well. Call him up and tell him that you listen to the show and you'd like to come over and pick his brain. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks, Robert.
Easy,
thanks for the phone call, Robert.
All right. Well, that gets us going a little bit. 617-254-1030, 888-WBZ-1030. Let's continue with our calls. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. If you've had an experience in China, we'd love to have you share that with us. If you have a question about China, one quick question I have is, with all the craziness that's going on in the world, And I know that China's had its problems and incidents, but is China a pretty safe country to visit?
China is a pretty safe country to visit, and Hong Kong, even with all of the protests, and you were nice enough to have me on your show a couple years ago to talk about the Umbrella Revolution and everything else, you absolutely can walk alone at midnight and not have any fear that something's going to happen.
And the accommodations, the hotels now become pretty westernized?
They've become pretty westernized, but they also have been very keen about security in the sense that people will look at you when you go in. You can't get up to the upper floors without swiping your room key, and it's just a safe place to be.
And as an American, are you still a curiosity there?
I think that you're all, you know, the politics of China and the politics of Hong Kong are a lot different than the citizens. And especially if you speak a lot of the languages, which I'm lucky enough to be able to do, you are able to make friends because you stand out. It's just, you know, you're taller, you're thinner, you're whatever. And it's fun that you don't have to worry where you're from is going to be your calling card, that you can just have a conversation.
And
with
again,
somebody.
You're interacting mostly with businesses.
Correct.
With Chinese businesses in China.
Right.
So the American businesses.
Combination. So I try and cast as wide a net as possible for the BU students and give them some U.S. multinationals, some entrepreneurial startups, as well as some, you know, Chinese or Hong Kong-based businesses.
All right. Let's go to right back to the call. Zach is up in the great state of Maine. Zach, next on Night Side with Professor Gregory Stoller. Go right ahead.
Hello, Professor.
Hi, Zach. How are you?
I'm a senior business student up at USM and Maine, which if callers don't know, that's the University of Southern Maine.
Oh, we're very familiar with that school, Zach. So you're a senior at the University of Maine. Thanks for listening to the Night Side. Go right ahead.
Southern Maine.
Southern Maine.
Okay. Maine.
Yeah, right. We're familiar with that school.
And I also work for Walmart. So I'm just wondering, like a company like Walmart, why don't they source more of their products that they sell in China from the U.S.? Because they're getting container ships daily from over China over here for the goods that they sell. So there's empty containers. Why aren't they filling up with goods from the U.S. to send back and sell in their stores over there?
So you're saying that you're saying the container ships come here packed with goods made in China to be sold in the U.S., but they go back across the Pacific empty?
Where's most goods? Why doesn't Walmart purchase U.S.-made goods to send back to China to sell? Is it a tariff or?
So you want to know why Walmart does not purchase U.S. goods to send back to China to sell?
Or any Walmart or any U.S. retailer.
Okay. Well, I assume because the goods are more expensive here and that because they cannot make a profit selling them in China. But I'll leave it to Professor Stoller to give you
the correct
answer.
I would absolutely agree. But I will tell you that gap is tightening a lot because labor rates have increased so much in China. So as a result, the differential between something you could manufacture in China and something you could manufacture in the United States or perhaps in Vietnam or Cambodia has changed a lot in the past 2 or 3 years.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know
Let me ask a question. What do we export to China? What are we able to produce here that the Chinese people are capable of buying? I'm asking this to Professor Stoller. What is it?
High-end goods, luxury goods the Chinese are buying en masse. Gucci, Louis Vuitton, the list of brands go on and on. Lamborghinis.
So that has to be a limited audience. I do know that's, what is it, 100 and, I think I read it in a subject, 131, is it billionaires?
Yes, absolutely.
In China.
Don't forget, it's prestigious as heck still to have a non-Chinese brand. And the top of that brand pyramid is still the United States.
We selling basketball sneakers?
We are selling anything that is a famous brand, whether it be a car, whether it be a handbag, whether it be a sneaker. People love
blue jeans.
Absolutely. People love, to them, it's a mark of gentrification.
So where did they get the money?
The Chinese have a huge savings rate.
So there is a market over there that we can tap into.
Right. But therein lies the problem is it's not happening fast enough. The government wants people to spend, but people are worried about a rainy day because the same stock market gyrations we're having in the U.S., they're having in China. So people are keeping the money under a mattress.
Zach, what are you going to do with your degree when you get out of school?
Probably work for Walmart. I want to move up and go as far as I can. I would love to be CEO one day.
Nothing wrong with that. If you make CEO, call me. We'll have you in as a guest, okay?
I'll definitely do that, Dan.
Thanks, Zach. And thank you for listening to Nightside. I appreciate it very much.
Welcome. Have a great night.
You too. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. We had a couple of teenage brothers call in last hour.
Really?
A 10-year-old.
Oh, I heard that on the radio. Yeah.
And we got Zach. He's probably 22 if he's a senior. We got a good audience. I appreciate it. John in Jamaica Plain. John, you next on Nightside. Professor Gregory Stoller from Boston University.
Hi, gentlemen. How you doing?
Hi, John. How are you?
Good, thanks. I do spend a fair amount of time in China. I probably make 3 or 4 trips a year. And, you know, one point I just wanted to make, and I think the professor just touched on this as well, is just as an example, you know, you drive around the big cities in China and the streets are, you know, they're chock full of American automobiles. I see more Buicks on the roads of Shanghai and Beijing than I do on the roads of Boston and New York. So I think there are a lot of, you know, American companies, and, you know, particularly the American, you know, automotive industry that I think is probably very grateful to have the Chinese market and to have made inroads in the Chinese market, especially in the last 5 to 10 years. So I think, you know, often, you know, especially election time, the way the media tends to portray things is that it's one way traffic, but it's very much not the case. And I think there are a lot of American companies in a lot of those areas that the professor just mentioned that I think are doing quite well by China. And I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. No, I completely agree with you. And I love the fact that it's nice that we can further develop our export markets outside of the United States. To your point, Dan, about the trade imbalance, it's nice to see.
What I'm wondering about, and John, let me just ask a question off of yours. Obviously, if there are wealthy people in China who can buy Gucci and high-end Nike or whatever items of clothing and automobiles that are distinctively American. Where's the middle class over there? Or doesn't a middle class exist? I'm asking you.
You're asking me? Yeah. I would say that the middle class is up and rising. Don't forget, if your salary, Dan, increased by 22%, then you'd have a lot more disposable income than you had a year ago. So if you think that everybody is having their, not everybody, but a large majority of the population, the middle class, having their wages increase by a fifth, then guess what? They have the ability to buy something a lot more than they did a year earlier.
All right, John, you want a final question or are you all set?
All set. Thanks.
Thanks,
you
guys. John. Let's go from John in Jamaica Plain to John up in New Hampshire. John in New Hampshire, I'm Professor Greg Stoller from Boston University. Go ahead, John.
Good evening, Professor.
Hi, John.
I'm part of a business group that's in the process of bringing some American products into China, and I personally have not been over there yet. But what I'm wondering, is there any sort of a local networking group of Chinese individuals in New England or even just here on the East Coast that would be people looking to get involved in an American-based business to bring it to China? We've already got the license set up to go there.
There are actually a couple of avenues that you can pursue. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, by the way. Continue.
Well, it's just we've already got the license to go over there. We've got some people working on the infrastructure. It's just a matter of finding people that already have connections over there to work with, so we're not going in ice cold once we go over.
I think there are a couple of resources at your disposal in Massachusetts, and I'm sure there are the same sorts of organizations in New Hampshire. The Mass Export Center, just as an example, they help Massachusetts businesses to export their goods outside of the United States. And of course, the other half of what they do is they look for non-U.S. businesses to come into Massachusetts. I would also encourage you to check out the Chinese Chamber of Commerce, whether it be in New England or whether it be in Washington, D.C. They exist to help further Chinese business interest. And if you're able to get connections locally in the United States, they can then introduce you to people over in China itself and hopefully pave the way for you to get your products onto the market that much more quickly.
Great. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Thank you, John. Have a great night. Let me get one more call in here if we can. Dorothy from North Reading, if we can steal a minute. Dorothy, we got about a minute for you. What's your question or what's your comment?
Real quick. My daughter's a Hong Kong resident, so we spent a lot of time between Hong Kong, Shanghai, and mainland China. Can you speak to the banks in China, which is quite interesting compared to our safety mechanisms? And I think that also presents part of the problem with our ability to export successfully, which
So your question deals, Dorothy, with whether or not Chinese banks have the equivalent of FDIC as we have here in America.
Yes, but their stability at the present time is not the same as it was, let's say, 10 years ago.
Okay, we got about 30 seconds left, Greg. What can you do with that one?
What I would do is tell you that with the advent of Alibaba and WeChat, people are no longer depositing money in a bank nearly as much as they did before. They're using their phone to absolutely do everything, which again further contributes to the problem is that if you think about a classic economy, a bank gets deposits, it loans money out, and that's what keeps the economy moving. Now it's actually being done by individuals because they're doing so much commerce on their mobile phone. So Dorothy's absolutely right.
Dorothy, you got an exciting life there. Congratulations.
Oh, she does corporate sustainability and ethical standards.
Oh, that's really cool.
Thanks, Dorothy. I'm up against the clock here, unfortunately. We'll talk soon, okay?
Bye-bye.
To the caller still on the line, you should have called in early. We're going to continue our conversation, not about China, but about traveling with Bob Weiss in the next hour. Professor Gregory Stoller, we'll have you back as always. Great guest.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
And folks want to see the professor wearing a Nightside hooded sweatshirt, just go to cbsboston.com/nightside right now. It is up there. It will be posted. He's standing in the Great Wall of China.
Hello, Jared the Galleria of Jewelry here. Now, I'm different than your ordinary jewelry store, and it's not just because I can talk. Rather, it's because I'm always thinking outside the jewelry box. One of my big differences is selection. You see, I have 5 times the selection of ordinary jewelry stores. You'll find Tolkowski Ideal Cut Diamonds, Pandora Charms and Bracelets, Neil Lane Bridal, and only at Jared, beautiful Heart's Desire Diamond Fashion Jewelry. If you've got a minute, check out my huge selection of stunning Swiss timepieces and fashion watches. My watch experts will help you find one in no time. Plus, if you want to design your own piece of jewelry, every one of my stores has its own design and service center to help you bring your idea to life. If incredible selection, unique brands, and service make a difference to you, there's one place to go, to a different kind of jewelry store. And that's why he went to Jared.